You have here selections from the Scala Claustralium, the ladder of those who live in the cloister, the ladder of monks, as it's sometimes translated, although the title is a little more generic. It refers to anyone who lives within a monastic enclosure, and it is the classical text to which all writers on the subject of Lectio Divina, and to a lesser extent, allegorical exegesis, inevitably return. The four steps or stages of Lectio, as Guigo II of the Grand Chartreuse describes them, become the way of talking about this process, although as we have seen, it can be rather dangerous to regard this as a simple linear progression, when in reality the process of this kind of experience of the scriptures has its own rhythm, its own movement back and forth between what would probably be better called aspects or phases rather than rungs or steps or stages. But I'd like to say a little more about the significance of this text. The first is that when Guigo wrote, he wasn't writing or composing spontaneously. He was basing himself on a pre-existing text. He was basing himself on a description of the process of Lectio Divina that had been written by Hugh of St. Victor, who was not a monk, not a Carthusian, but a canon. That is to say, someone who lived in an institution that had become associated now with education, a group of religious men who were priests, who were affiliated with, associated, gathered around the bishop, usually in a cathedral, although the order of canons regular had already come into existence as well. But the idea of the canon was someone who was involved in liturgical celebration in churches, but also who was very often involved in education. And Guigo writes, basing himself on a text from Hugh of St. Victor's Didascalion, which is available as an optional thing to look at as a part of this portion of our studies. If you wish to, there is an optional section, and you can also download the relevant texts from the Didascalion from the course documents section of the website. But I simply want to place Guigo's reflections in perspective, because Hugh, as an educator, the source on which Guigo is basing himself, has an extra step that Guigo does not mention. As a canon, as someone involved in education, in the practical work of sharing information with people, for him, meditatio involves much more intellectual work. It's incorporated into the idea of education and theological and philosophical speculation and reflection, but there is a fifth step of operatio, of works, of carrying out in action what is acquired or experienced or offered in the process of finding God in the scriptures, which comes, at least in Hugh's model, before contemplation or contemplatio. So in Guigo, we have someone who has deliberately removed the steps, the step of operatio, of works, in order to create something that will fit more into the model of those who live within the enclosure, who live within the cloister, and who are not involved in what would be regarded as external activities or external works. So Guigo is refashioning, reshaping an already existing model. And that's important for us to bear in mind, because there was also this alternate tradition, Hugh's text was very widely known, in which this step of operatio, of carrying out an action, of sharing with others, was an important part of the process as well. That we might want to bear in mind when we consider the significance of this in the area of spiritual guidance, spiritual direction, that there was an addition to what we find in Guigo, an approach that believed that interaction with others, not just in prayer, not just in lifting them up in one of the steps or stages or aspects of this process, but in going out directly to them and sharing with them, was an important part as well. But we'll look at Guigo, because his is the text that is most widely commented on today, most often turned to, most often used as the basis for a spirituality or a theology of Lectio Divina as a means into allegorical exegesis. And I'd like to highlight it, I'd like to frame it as a document that we can perceive as bearing witness to the centrality of entering into a vital, vibrant relationship with the scriptures in order to discover meaning. That meaning, that purpose, that sense of a reality and of a goal and of an ultimate meaning of virtually everything in an experience of God. Guigo will highlight and emphasize the beauty, as he puts it, the sweetness of the experience of contemplatio. And I think we'll be able to see that the images he uses make it clear that for him that experience of contemplatio, especially as it's experienced in the metaphor, the models of the transfiguration of Jesus and then Jacob wrestling with the angel, are two very beautiful primordial images of seeing through to deeper meaning and purpose. If contemplation is like the transfiguration, then that is the place where Christ is seen as the one who he is. Christ is seen as the one who is truly divine, who before his passion reveals himself to his disciples. One sees in the middle of Christ's ministry, or towards the end of Christ's ministry, this beautiful witness to who and what he is, God suffering for us. So the transfiguration is the meaning in which, with which the events of the passion and death and resurrection will be invested, as well as, intriguingly, this model of Jacob wrestling with the angel, which is the bestowing of a new name, a wrestling with God, a being in a kind of a contact with God, which is both a challenge and yet a kind of embrace, in which the result is that one receives a new name. That is to say, Jacob's name is changed to Israel. He acquires a whole new identity. That's what happens in our encounter with God, in the scriptures or in any other context. We see through into a deeper meaning that gives the name to what we are attempting to accomplish or understand, and to ourselves as well. So if we bear in mind that those are going to be his primary metaphors for his understanding of contemplatio, we can appreciate that for him that is a kind of a high point, that is something ultimately desirable in this experience of finding God in the scriptures. It's not just about my having a good feeling of being blissing out on God, of being able to behold the Lord, and that is really sweet and really wonderful, and therefore I've had good lectio. On the contrary, for Guigo, if we look more deeply at what he's saying, what he's yearning for, what he's desiring, is what we would have to describe as an experience of meaning, coherence. And of course, from the standpoint of spiritual guidance and direction, that is what one both seeks in guidance and direction, and what the guide or director is to provide. So let's look at Guigo's model. He has what he calls these four rungs of the ladder: lectio, meditatio, oratio, contemplatio. And if you drop down, this is a ladder for the cloistered, by means of which they are raised up from earth to heaven. And I've included a little medieval illumination to remind us of how important this metaphor is. We've already seen it anticipated centuries before in the metaphor of the ladder in the martyrdom of Perpetua and Felicity. But here's another example in the Middle Ages. Saint Peter Damian in the heavens is seen as next to a ladder on which the saints ascend. So this image of the ascending ladder, which in Dante's Divine Comedy is the metaphor of the Purgatorio, the rising up towards heaven, also acquires another place in the highest realms of heaven itself. So this is a very powerful and useful image, but again, we have to be cautious with it, because for us as moderns, it can give the impression of you have to ascend from step to step to step, whereas in reality, this process is much more freewheeling, much more organic, much more like what we would have to call a dance or a symphonic movement. It's not simply a stepwise progression. He describes, this is a ladder by which we are raised. It has only a few rungs, yet its length is immense and incredible, because the higher part, he says, pierces the clouds and touches the secrets of heaven. Celorum secreta. So there is a reaching up into the highest parts of heaven. Again, this image of the touch, the embrace, the seeing of God, which I'd like us to be aware of, not only as a subjective, spiritually aesthetic experience, but a deeper apprehension of that meaning and purpose which is Christ, Christ the Logos, finding God, or the Logoi, the meaning in reality, is what we do, what happens to us when we experience God in contemplation. Suddenly, life has meaning. It all makes sense. One discovers that there is purpose and goal. And this is a very important thing to bear in mind, and in a certain sense, it's an important contradiction to a movement within contemporary society which regards it as somehow mature or or edgy or a vital alternative to simply emphasize meaninglessness, to highlight with art or literature or film or in some other way a notion that is the opposite to this experience of integration, perception of, and finally faith and hope in the fact that all activity has purpose and meaning, which really is the experience of Christian contemplation. We need to be able to assert that, to find texts like this that bear witness to it, and then to proclaim it in a culture which is very loudly in many quarters maintaining and proclaiming the opposite. So let's drop down a little further. Guigo describes the various names and numbers, and then in the text that I've highlighted with different colors on the different words to kind of emphasize what he's doing here, we see that effectively what he is doing is creating poems, a whole series of poems using these terms that kind of rhyme. You can do Latin, which you might call doggerel poetry, quite easily by keeping things pretty much in the same case. And the verbs then tend to fall into similar sounding patterns. And so if you look, he describes here, reading is study, meditation is the action of the mind, prayer is attending to God, contemplation is the mind being elevated and tasting this sweetness. Look at the words in Latin, lectio inspectio, meditatio actio, oratio intensio, contemplatio elevatio. This is not glorious, beautiful poetry in any sense, but it is a way of impressing it within the mind. And another aspect of this whole text that probably should be borne in mind is the fact that when Guigo raises this whole issue, he said at the very beginning of this selection that it was when I was occupied with manual labor that I began to reflect on our spiritual work, on our exercitio spirituale, the work of the spiritual work of the human person. It's out of the context of ordinary activity, of daily manual labor, that the need for, the desire for, the sense of the value or the purpose in this kind of a process arises. So he's providing little poetic ways of putting within the self, within the soul, the sense of a methodology that allows us to look out at creation, to hold within our hearts a word from the scriptures that allows us to pray and sense the presence of God that gives meaning, purpose, and as we'll see, a sense of being touched by God in precisely the ordinary things that we daily undertake. So, dropping down to number three, chapter three, the functions of these aforementioned rungs. Here again, we have very simple little poetic expressions, obviously intended to make this easily memorizable. Reading seeks, meditation finds, prayer asks, contemplation tastes. And he's using gustatory, tasting imagery, especially to describe contemplation, at least here in this section. And again, the Latin is very simple and very easy to memorize, and in fact rhyming, lectio inquirit, meditatio invenit, oratio postulat, contemplatio degustat. So there's this beautiful, simple kind of back and forth rhythm that allows one to hold and bear in mind and memorize this sense of how you approach these things. And much as the same is true of the next two poems, he tries to use again the image of tasting or taking in, being nourished by. Reading puts solid food in the mouth, meditation chews and breaks, prayer attains, contemplation is refreshed by the savor and the sweetness. And you can see again that the Latin invites exactly the same kind of rather poetic or at least rhyming way of holding and remembering these poems. Another way of looking at this, he says, reading concerns the surface, and it's as if you're trying to work through a sweet-tasting fruit. You have to work through the outer surface to get to that which is sweeter within. Reading concerns the surface, meditation the depth. Prayer concerns a request. One asks in prayer for God to grant one this experience of what he calls the delight in discovered sweetness, the delectio in adepte dulcedinis, the delight in that sweetness which has been uncovered or discovered. Here again, we could make this into a very selfish or self-oriented practice, but I think it's very clear as we now look at the images that he uses to describe what contemplation is that it's not just about an experience of my resting in God, enjoying that, and then getting back to difficult tasks, but that within daily experience which can highlight the inner meaning, the purpose, the reason for my being, a sense of hope and of joy in ordinary activity. Section 9, How Grace is Hidden, he describes the experience of contemplatio as the transfiguration. And that's why I've given this image that we've seen before, the transfiguration from St. Catherine's on Sinai, that beautiful ancient apse. O my soul, too long have we prolonged this speech, yet it was good to be here with Peter and John to contemplate the glory of the spouse. So like Origen and like St. Bernard and so many of the Christian mystics, Guigo is using the image of the relationship between a married couple, between husband and wife, to describe this union which God is inviting one into in the experience of contemplation. He wished us to make not one, not two, not three tabernacles, but one in which we might all dwell together. And yet Guigo is pointing out that this sense of resting in, seeing the deeper meaning and purpose of God, being with, contemplating the glory of, the truth of who the spouse is. We are in relationship with Christ, with God, the Word, the meaning, the purpose, the value. We want to dwell and abide, but the experience fades. It begins to recede. What does that mean? Well, he puts a very beautiful and positive spin on it. Suddenly it's not just the transfiguration. Now it's like Jacob wrestling with the angel. Let me go, for dawn is arising. That's what the angel says in this mysterious encounter between Jacob and the angel. Very interestingly, the rabbis, and this is parenthetical and kind of a secondary, the rabbis, even in Jesus' day, were asking, why did the angel have to go back to heaven as day was breaking? Why did he say he had to leave this wrestling contest with Jacob? And the answer they gave was, well, he had to be back for morning prayers. And so a tradition developed within rabbinic Judaism that Jacob had wrestled with the choir master of heaven. Again, that's kind of a cute allegorical carrying on of the text, but it represents the kind of speculation which allows one to shift from this imagery of moving away, contemplation is fading, I'm leaving it behind, but that's like when the angel left, and guess what? That's not the end of the story. He thus gives his blessing. He withers the nerve of the thigh, and this will be interpreted positively in the monastic tradition as meaning that one's given the capacity to say no to destructive impulses, to allow that which is addicting and compelling in a negative sense to die within ourselves. And he changes the name of Jacob to Israel. And then for a brief time he withdraws the spouse so long desired, so quickly gone. So contemplation, this central, asked for, longed for experience for Guigo, is about meaning. It's about seeing the purpose of God using this metaphor or image of the transfiguration, and even as the experience begins to fade, recognizing that one's name has been changed, one's life has been altered, one now has the ability to let go of the things that are destructive and allow the things that separate us from God and from each other to, as it were, die, to fade away. So it's about discovering a meaning, a purpose, and then realizing in an almost theosis-like way, a sense of the transfiguration or divinization of the self, that we have been changed in the encounter with God. And then he says, he removes himself, our visitation is ended, yet his presence abides. And he has a kind of a recapitulation of the meaning of these four senses, these four levels or aspects. And he concludes with an idea which again reminds us that this approach is not just about a practice. It's about a sense of a lifetime journey. He talks about, and this has to be taken in a very kind of a limited way, the first degree, that is to say, reading pertains to beginners, the second, meditatio, is to those who are proficient, the third, to those who have made even more progress, to the devotees, the fourth, contemplatio, to the blessed. So he describes it as a process that deepens and becomes more rich, more possible and rewarding as one's time passes. Again, I think this is a very useful text. It certainly is central for anyone who is interested in the tradition of or the language that is used to describe Lectio Divina, this method that leads into allegorical or symbolic interpretation of the scriptures. But it's also a very vivid reminder of the fact that what's going on, especially in the theology of contemplation, is a quest of an experience of meaning, purpose, joy, and delight that allows one to look at the rest of life, at one's own experience, one's own interior life, in a new way, filled with, touched by the light of God, given new meaning and purpose, the thing one seeks in spiritual guidance, and again, the thing that the spiritual guide and director is supposed to be able to help the individual discover.